Unspoken Issues.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to You Wanted It, You Got It, the second of the 2099 podcasts. That's right. You chose two. No, you didn't break the tie is what you didn't do. We had two winners.
Take them to task.
I will, dang it. They got to listen to me now. We had two books that tied for the most recent Unspoken Issues poll. This is the second of those, and that is Doom 2099. And here to discuss it, I'm Jesse Starcher, by the way. How y'all doing? To discuss that with me, the one, the only Chris Armstrong. Chris Armstrong, are you ready to talk about Doom 2099?
I'm shocking ready.
Whoa. Oh, no.
Sorry for the strong language.
We're going to get demonetized as if we see any money at all. Anyway, listen, that is funny because that is going to lead into one of my talking points. But yeah, we're talking Doom 2099. You know, if you caught our last podcast, it was about Punisher 2099. We talked about the poll results where X-Men came in last, Spider-Man came in above that with one vote, and then we had the two-way tie between Doom and Punisher for 2099. But Chris Armstrong, did you have anything else you wanted to add in regards to the poll, the option that were out there, or you know, why these four? I mean, just rehash it for the people.
I've been wanting to talk about 2099 a little bit for a while, so my initial thought was to do the four launch titles: Spider-Man, Doom, Punisher, and Ravage, the Stan Lee classic.
That's what I heard.
And then I realized nobody likes Ravage, including me. So
I hope Evan Bevins is just like, you guys had to do this twice. You had to do this twice.
So I just excised Ravage and threw X-Men 2099 in there as the fourth option. Thinking full well it didn't matter because Spider-Man was going to win no matter what. And
yeah,
he didn't even place in the top two. So that was kind of a surprise. But
unreal.
So yeah, that was kind of the genesis.
Okay. So we're hopping into Doom 2099. And as we mentioned on the previous podcast, this is the one that kind of got a little bit, well, I mean, most of the well reception in our circles, at least most of the people I've talked to has always talked about how Doom 2099 was the one we needed, somebody that you needed to read. If there was any 2099 title that you wanted to read, it should be this one. So I was like, okay, sell me on it. Usually within the first sentence, two words were uttered. And that was time travel. And I was like, oh, well, okay. You got my attention. I'm a big fan of that plot device. Made no bones about it. So I've always wanted to read Doom 2099, and I'm glad we do get to talk about it because it is the one that I voted for. A lot of people, including my wife, who did vote, my wife, who don't read comics, she does not read comics, but she knew. She's like, oh, Jesse, I know he'll vote for Punisher. That's his guy. She voted for Punisher. So anyway, I voted for Doom because I thought, well, you know, it's got a couple things that I'm interested in reading. Plus, I don't know much about the character. And if it's the actual Victor Von Doom from our 616 that we're used to reading, then I'm all about it. The train has left the station. I'm ready to rock and roll, but I definitely want to give you the opportunity to talk about anything else 2099 related.
We can swing back around after we talk about this actual issue, because I did want to talk about a little bit of the other 2099 stuff, but we'll swing around at the end after we talk about Doom.
Sounds like a good plan to me. Doom 2099 number one hits the shelves November 17th, 1992. $1.75 cover price. The title of the story is Muses of Fire, and our writer here is a guy by the name of John Francis Moore. And if you check out his bibliography, he's known for such stints, straight off the wiki, as writer on X-Force, X-Factor, Doom 2099, and X-Men 2099. So, but yeah, you could go onto the Wikipedia, you could see he does have his hand in some DC Comics and Marvel Comics as well. Quite a bit on, man, he wrote X-Men 2099 1 through 35, sir.
Yeah.
So this guy, he's doing Doom 2099 for, do they have it listed here? Yeah, he did issues 1 through 8, 10 through 15, 17 through 25. So man, he's got like, yeah, he's got his hands big time into the 2099 universe, at least in those two titles. It doesn't look like he had 2099 Unlimited and some other stuff there. But yeah, X-Men and Doom looks like to be his forte for the 2099 universe. Now, Pat Broderick, yeah, you'll recognize his artistic talents on Batman Year 3, Captain Atom, The Fury of Firestorm, Green Lantern, Micronauts, and The Swamp Thing, and also Doom 2099. So lettered by John Costanza, colored by Christy Scheel. So I'm going to go ahead and hop into the synopsis.
That synopsis is right around the corner, but first, let me talk about Amazon Music. You may not be able to find Victor Von Doom's popular ballad-laden album, Lamentations of a Lovesick Latvian. I hear it's only available in the 616 universe and has to be specially ordered through a Romani website. But you will be able to find the late rapper MF Doom's 2004 release, Food, has tracks like Poo Putt Platter, Fig Leaf Bicarbonate, and One Beer. If you had to get amazonmusic.com/W2M Network, you can get a free 30-day trial where you can check out over 70 million songs. That's getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network for that free 30-day trial.
Latveria has gone downhill. Some shady dealings down on the street lead to an attempted arrest of some government info black market dealers. As they make their escape, a figure materializes before them. It is a chronologically displaced Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom, who is confused as to where he is. He's clad in the armor, he's got the cape. Dr. Doom, screaming in pain, just shows up out of nowhere. After dispatching the authorities, he asks the dealers what happened to his castle. They mention Doom needs to be concerned about Tiger Wild, the ruler of Latveria, not some crumbling castle. It's been gone for years. Fast forward to Gojradia. Gojradia is what I'm going to go with. And the tower that Tiger Wild calls home. And he is having a conversation with a Mr. Stone of Alchemax. We talked about that. Alchemax accusing them of having an assassin attempt to kill him that clearly failed. We meet Tiger's friend Fortune, a tarot card reading gypsy, and a man by the name of Zone. As Fortune begins a tarot reading for Tiger, Doom busts in, demanding he be recognized as the ruler of Latveria, and for Tiger to leave immediately. Doom threatens Tiger, but Tiger is able to get the upper hand quickly, laying Doom out on the floor. Tiger removes Doom's mask to show a handsome chiseled face beneath, and he says he cannot be the Doom, as history says he was horrifically scarred. So Tiger, not one to go against history, blasts him in the face and orders his body to be removed. However, Fortune has other ideas, as she takes Doom's body to a camp to recover. She explains that the tarot cards have signaled that Doom's arrival will create a shift in power, and Fortune wants to avoid Tiger's apparent path leading towards Latveria's destruction. She also explains that she is part of a tribe called Zephyro, and after recognizing an amulet Fortune is wearing, Doom believes they are bound together by gypsy blood. So I did a real quick research on the Zephyro tribe.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing, definitely. I don't know if you know much about Dr. Doom, but apparently his bloodline, or he was part of the Zephyro tribe, so you could probably put those two things together in what happens in the book. But yes, he sees that him and Fortune are bound together by gypsy blood. Fortune introduces him to Wire, who is helping out accessing the web to help repair Doom's suit. After using Fortune's amulet to find a plane hidden by Doom in the past, Doom, Fortune, Wire, and a lady by the name of Xantra leave for an island near South America. There, they find a facility that is ran by one of the world's leading corporations, Pixel. So if you haven't figured it out now, 2099 is pretty much ruled by corporations. All right. The team breaks in and finds a neurosurgeon by the name of Dr. Celia Quinone. Victor tells her that if she conducts a procedure on him, she will gain her freedom from the Pixel Corporation, so she obliges and begins the surgery. While under, it appears Victor is battling within himself as to if he is the genuine article. Now, I don't know if this is part of the plot later, but you could tell that Doom is like working some stuff out because and actually we'll get to that here in a second, so I will circle back on that. Okay. But there's obviously, like, I think it's like a whole page just dedicated to him fighting within himself as to whether he is actually Victor Von Doom. Mm-hmm. So awakening, he learns of some of the upgrades he has received. Neural and motor response has been enhanced while also gaining lighter, sturdier armor made out of adamantium langside. I doubt I'm pronouncing either one of those. Adamantium langside. When the procedure is done, he proclaims that Dr. Doom is dead. Long live Doom. So that is the story. It's a little bit long in the tooth, but I got it all out there. That last page, like I was talking about last week, he is clad in armor, mm-hmm. and He is, but he definitely looks different, and he's taken up that whole page, if I remember correctly. So he definitely looks pretty
very similar to the finale of Punisher 2099.
Yeah, he's ready to take on the world. So like I said, first things first, time travel, you got me. All right. If this is Victor Von Doom showing up right here at the beginning, and he's just brought out of some painful time travel experiment. I love the fish out of water storytelling where he's just like, what's going on? Where's my castle? Who are these people? Love it. I love it. But before I get into the rest of this stuff, man, you have the floor.
I had read some of the early like Doom and Punisher issues. I only really followed Spider-Man 2099 for very long, but my memories were always of that Doom 2099 was Victor Von Doom from, you know, current day, you know, transported into the future. But this first issue is casting some doubt on whether that's actually true. You know, he's not scarred up like
I'm the same way.
Is he's having this internal conflict about whether Doom is dead or if he's actually Doom. My memory was that it was settled like from the beginning. Oh, this is Doom. He's in the future, but he's in the future now.
Yeah,
which is a cool angle. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know how that resolved itself. But I was kind of surprised to see that it wasn't as straightforward as I had remembered it being.
Yeah, now, everybody that's talked to me about this series have said, you know, it's Doom from our past into the future. So I would imagine that at some point it resolves himself, and that's what it's going to be. Unless they didn't read past like first issue or something, but
or they just like me, they are only going by memories of, you know, scattered issues over the years.
Exactly. They remove his mask obviously very seldom because he's so Dr. Doom is so guarded of his face, and that's why he wears the mask. Supposedly he's horribly scarred underneath, but for some reason I'm thinking there was a story at one point where they removed his mask or they got to see underneath and all he had was just this tiny little scar across his face.
I'd heard that too. I think that comes from a Kirby, like a sketch he did.
Okay.
I don't think that was ever actually in a comic. I could be wrong. Yeah, I know I've seen that sketch that Kirby had done where he's removing the mask and you can just see he's got like a scar down his cheek, like a small one, but he's so vain that he thinks he's hideously disfigured by his past. So, but I don't know if that's actually a continuity or not. It may be.
Do you have any issues with future slang?
I think it's dumb most of the time. Even when I was, you know, 12, 13, when these books came out and they were using terms like shock as like a substitute curse word.
Yeah.
I thought, man, that's really lame. Just don't have swear word. Like, just use the, like any other comic would.
Well, they
like,
did that in our previous issue that we talked about in Punisher 2099. He grabs a hold of Kron's legs and he, you know, it's stop at you or something. And it's just like asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
Just the symbols and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more distracting than anything. Like, to me, I don't like it.
I remember covering Future Imperfect with Mark and it didn't bother me that bad. But then Mark was like, I hate it. I hate future slang. I was like, wow, some people are pretty passionate about it. I think I'm with you in the vein of like, if it's overused, and it's overused in this issue, it was not in Punisher 2099. So I think I was able to digest Punisher 2099 better than I was this, just because it's distracting. You're like, oh, what does that word mean? Now I have to go through my head and like, okay, is he actually talking about a disk drive or is he saying a bad word?
Yeah. And then you have to be like, what is it the substitute for? Like, so you're kind of playing those games in your head while you're trying to read this comic. And so I just don't like it.
Yeah. So what do you think?
I'm not super passionate about it. Like, I guess Mark is.
Oh, yeah. Mark,
but I don't like it.
He loves the Hulk too. And he likes Future Imperfect, but he couldn't get past, that. Our villain here, Tiger Wild, clearly again, we're thrown far into the future. You're going to have new characters coming at you. Mm-hmm. We got a new villain here, Tiger Wild. What do you think of this guy?
I need to know more.
Okay.
So is he like a tiger, like a Dr. Moreau Tiger Man? Is that did he change his name to Tiger Wild because he's a tiger, or did he just get all this surgery done to look like a tiger because his name is Tiger? I don't understand what's going on with this guy.
Yeah, I remember that the one mention where Doom's getting his butt handed to him, which is okay, if we're going to establish a villain, you got a villain established when you can put Dr. Doom on the ground and practically all the intent was to kill him. And I was like, okay, Doom's a little bit out of his element here. And there was quite a bit of time where I was wondering, okay, is this a Doom bot? Because it's mentioned. They say, mm-hmm. oh, here comes another Doom bot. Okay, we'll handle it again. And I'm like,
they've had to deal with these in the past.
Yeah, I was like, okay, well, maybe this is a Doom bot. And then we'll kind of switch back to the adventures of Victor Von Doom and trying to figure out what happened to his castle. But no, this is actually Victor Von Doom who gets his butt handed to him. But he mentions, I think, in the fray or at the time, he's wasn't prepared for cybernetics or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we know he's part cyborg. I don't know about the rest. Tiger Man, Man Tiger.
We, have should, no clue. We should say he looks like most of his body looks like gold armor or cybernetics or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then his face is like orange with like tiger stripes and stuff. So
yeah,
he looks kind of halfway animalistic, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think establishing him as a villain, he puts Victor Von Doom in his place, and not yeah. too many people can do that within the span of like three panels.
And he mentions, I like the angle that, you know, he has a line here. Did you really think your antiquated armor was enough to succeed where the best corporate soldiers have failed? So it's like, you know, Doom's armor is like totally outdated.
It's ancient.
For yeah. 20, I mean, it's, we're talking 107 years in the future from when this was published. So like his armor is like peak, you know, maybe just under Iron Man in his time. But like in the future, it's just not up to snuff. So he gets humbled pretty quickly.
Yeah. There was a little bit of an element here that I had a question mark that came above my head. If you know anything about it, great. If not, that's fine. So they get to that bunker facility, that pixel facility in that island off the coast of South America. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as they're breaking in there, there's this guy who's watching them from, like, you know, where all the security cameras are, the security monitors, I should say. And he's killed, I think, a pixel guard.
Right. It looks like, and take it as uniform maybe,
but he just shows up, he's watching them, and that's it. What did I miss something there, or is that like,
I don't think he shows up again, does he?
Not in the book. No, I mean, so, not,
I mean,
not,
I guess that's just foreshadowing for him to come in the next issue or in a later or something.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if this was like, hey, did you see the main villain that's going to show up three issues later. I'm like, oh no, I don't know what the hell's going on. The other thing I had here was the dream during the surgery. So as if not to cast more doubt as to whether this is the actual Victor Von Doom, we have the dream that he's having during the surgery, which you could say maybe supports he is not.
Right.
But you could also say, well, that's just in there because there's so much of a change that he's going through. Plus yeah.
He's had a lot of trauma.
Yeah. Great, great word. He's had a lot of trauma from having been displaced. All this pain he went through, apparently, that caused this time travel to happen. But he's been displaced. He's having to rely on other people to kind of help him through and get this done. I think that's one of the things that, you know, he's so vain and so caught up in, like, he should be the all powerful ruler and everybody bow down to him, and he gets his butt handed to him. He has to rely on kids to get him around. So things have changed for him. So after the surgery, he's just like, Victor Von Doom's dead. Dr. Yeah. Doom is dead. Long live Doom. Reach to the mm-hmm. skies, power surging through his fingertips. Are you thinking along the lines I am, or are you leaning one way towards the other as to whether this is something that supports he is the real Doom?
Yeah, there's not enough here for me to really lean one way or the other. I kind of lean towards that he is the real Doom, just because that's what I've always kind of thought. Mm-hmm. And I assume that eventually that'll be brought to light and that'll be the case, but maybe not. I don't know. But I really like the new Doom armor.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You know, the old armor, it's like this gray metal, even for the 90s, kind of outdated. You know, it was created by Kirby in the 60s. It looks, I mean, it still looks cool. He's still pretty much got the same armor now. I assume that it would be like a chrome, you know, super shiny metal, although you don't really necessarily get that sense. That's kind of how I remembered it being. Mm-hmm. But it's got the, you know, the spikes and stuff to give it that 90s flair and stuff. But I really like, I like Doom 2099's design. And I like the fact that the logo has kind of worked in the Doom eyes as the O's in
yes,
the
Doom sir.
2099 logo.
Yeah,
yeah, really cool design on Doom.
I agree.
And it's not the same color scheme either, because it's got like, he's got like a blue cloak instead of the green. So it gives him kind of a fresh look.
I agree. I was just about to say, he's got a color change going on. He doesn't have the the hood, at least right now, he's not wearing the hood. You just see the circular helmet and red eyes. He's, yeah, it's, this is Doom for the 90s, 2090s, that is. Yes, sir, ladies and gentlemen, I went there. okay, yeah, that's cool, because that was one of the things I was going to touch on was his armor. The only other thing I had listed here, I mean, I got some of the ads. I was able to see that we had Stan Soapbox in here. And uh-huh. They were actually talking about a lot of the stuff from the UK was getting ready to come over. And I didn't know if you remembered much about the titles like Mystech Wars and Blood Seed.
That they existed. I never was able, and I was always kind of curious, like Death's Head and a lot of that other stuff I was always curious about, but I was never able to get a hold of any. I see them in, you know, quarter bins and stuff.
Yeah, back issue bins.
And I'd like to get, you know, some run, because I think most of those are pretty short runs of comics. So I kind of like to get some of those runs together and check them out, but I never have. Battle Tide, that's one that I really remember seeing ads for when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That, yeah. I think was like a crossover with a lot of those characters. But
I've got a few issues of Wild Thing, I think. And she shows up. I think she does actually appear in some USA Marvel comics as well. At least she was being carried at my, I can remember her being carried over here at our local shop. But
yeah, I don't remember seeing, I mean, I remember Death's Head and Death's Head 2 maybe, mm-hmm. but those are the only like UK Marvel UK titles I can ever remember ever seeing when I was younger. I saw ads for the others a lot of times, but those were the only ones I ever remember actually seeing at stores and stuff.
Dark Angel might look like something I had read as, or at least I'd seen. Black Axe, Super Soldiers, Gun Runner. I know. And the mind blasting mystery of Plasma.
Ooh.
Yeah, yes, sir. So, all right, back to the issue here, the actual story. Anything else you want to say about Doom 2099 before we get into your, you wanted to kind of talk about the other titles as well.
Sure.
So, anything else you want to talk about?
You know, Pat Broderick was the artist here. You know, we didn't really give Tom Morgan any props on the Punisher episode, but he's a good artist. He seemed like, speaking of Morgan, he was more like the workhorse of Marvel, it seemed like, in like the 90s, and he did a lot of different titles, it seemed like, that I would kind of read issues of here and there, but he wasn't flashy, you know, but he got the job done. I think he's a good artist. He did a good job with that issue. And kind of the same thing here. Pat Broderick does a pretty good job with this issue. I'm not really familiar with the other, like you mentioned his bibliography earlier, but I'm not familiar with a lot of his work outside of just this, although I do recognize the name. But he does a good job with this issue, especially I'm assuming he did the design of Doom 2099, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was very prominent in the 80s and 90s. Looks like he's got some credit in the late 70s as well for some of the stuff that he did. Yeah, I was going to say, I'll agree with you there. The art was, it was done very well. I was able to follow the story. I think, you know, okay, hey, look, there was a tie of the top two, so I guess I can pick my favorite,
sure.
Right? I'll pick my favorite of the two between Punisher 2099 and Doom 2099. I like the Punisher issue a lot better, and I think reason being is it seemed like there was a better flow to it for some reason. Actually, mm-hmm. Probably the simplest way to put it was an easy read, and I didn't feel too out of place with a character that I thought I would not have any desire to read about. I was like, you know, I'm with Punisher 2099, if it's just a dude on a Charles Bronson vengeance spree, which is exactly what Punisher is, that's all we need. And they didn't really, at least in that first issue, they didn't bog it down with a whole lot of politics this and politics that. Yeah. You get a familiarity of the world, and then you kind of go from there. Doom is the ruler of a nation. He was at one point. So there's going to be politics, you know, of between the nations and where his ruling stands and all that. I that's kind of what I expected. And I'm not saying that I was balked down on the issue with it. It was just one less thing I had to worry about in Punisher 2099. I just had to worry about him finding the villain and what was his motivation. Here, it's like, yeah, it's got time travel. I'm down. But and there's probably more to this story and more in enjoyable bits of the story. They're setting things up, just like I said, with the dude in the pixel security room. I'm sure there's some good stuff there. Fortune's probably going to have some run-ins with her boss. Clearly, she's working on the outside of her boss's interest, Tiger Wilde's interest. And Tiger Wilde, I mean, Tiger Man, Tiger. We got to have that answer at some point. So, but yeah, I enjoyed myself. I'm picking Punisher 2099, though.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. It was the more accessible, easier read, I think. I did like the Doom 2099 issue. You know, we didn't do panels either, I don't think, for Punisher.
Oh, we didn't. I'm just
going to throw out on both of these issues, my favorite panel is the last page, splash page of just like the poster shot of the character.
Right, you cherry picker. You are a cherry picker.
I mean, those are easy, but that's what I'll go with.
Well, then, you know, if you want to take a splash page for Punisher 2099, all right, I'll take the splash page with the title at the top. It says Deadly Genesis, and it has Jake Gallows unleashing hell upon the, what were they called? The street surgeons?
Yeah.
He's unleashing hell, which now we actually, folks, we're going back and looking at that panel. We can see that gun that we had such a big discussion in action, apparently fire. I don't know if he's firing. I have no idea. I'm not even going to go into that because it looks like it's firing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 bullets all at once. And then the barrel looks empty. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's a secondary weapon or what's going on there.
I don't know either. All right. But if we go over to Doom and I pick a panel here, I will pick Doom materializing. How's that? Okay.
There
because
you go.
That sets my stuff up for what I was going to enjoy. You know, he's out in the middle of nowhere. He has no idea what's going on. These people just come upon him and a big Terminator bubble pops up with Doom standing in the middle. So I'll go with that. It's like one panel of the, it looks like Wire and Xandra trying to avoid hitting him as he appears out of nowhere. So
one more thing quickly on Doom, that we had this character Wire you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he's doing a lot of, this is like the early days of the internet. And,
yes.
This is when this came out. So we have this hacker type guy, you know, doing a lot of like, it's kind of neat. Like these writers are trying to envision what the world's going to be like 100 years later. And this is at a time when technology is advancing pretty rapidly. The internet's becoming a thing. So it's kind of interesting to look back at these books and kind of see where their minds were leading them as far as how the world might be 100 years later or whatever. So,
yeah. What was that? What was our first ever episode we recorded with Dean? The name of that
Kingdom
book.
Come?
Nope.
The hacker book.
Yeah, it was Hacker Files. Hacker Files.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the internet's just becoming a thing practically. I mean, legitimately beginning to be popularized at that time. And yeah, you're right. These guys have to look and think about if we took another 20 minutes, we could probably go through each issue and pick out these weird technological thoughts that they had. But the internet thing is very, very prescient, really, because he's got it in his that we're not too far off from that. I'm telling you, Google Glass was a thing. I guarantee you at some point we're going to have something in front of our eyes, just like Back to the Future 2. They were helmets, if I remember correctly.
Quickly on the rest of the 2099, you know, line, we was it Chris Bailey who basically talked about X-Men 2099 being a train wreck?
Yes, sir.
You know, I don't remember. He may be right. I don't remember specifics about that comic, but I did like that book quite a bit when it finally came out, because I remember thinking, like, when they released the other books, like, you know, X-Men was the big thing, you know, for Marvel. And it's like, why is there no X-Men 2099? So when it finally came out, you know, 6-8 months later, however long it was, that was a big deal. And it was the same writer, John Francis Moore. And they got Ron Lim as the artist, who was kind of a big deal at the time. He had done the back end of the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries, and he did the sequels for that. He had done Silver Surfer and Captain America. You know, I was a big fan of his, and I've got a trade of X-Men 2099, and I was looking, just kind of thumbing through it, and like, his art in this book is maybe the best he ever looked.
Oh, really?
Which I noticed that Adam Kubert is the inker on at least a few of the issues.
Oh, okay.
So that may have a lot to do with why it looks a little bit better than some of his other stuff, which, I mean, not to denigrate him. I mean, I think he was good anyway, but yeah. I think him and Kubert together, like, were really a great team. And
I was going to say, different inkers can definitely bring out better art.
Yeah.
So I agree.
But yeah, that was a book that I liked a lot, and I would like to, you know, this trade I've had for probably 5 years, and I've never actually read it. but that's another book I want to go back to, is the X-Men book. So I'm not sure Chris Bailey's like specific reasons for that was. He may be right. I don't know, but hopefully I'll find out one day. But
well,
yeah,
I was going to say, yeah, well, maybe one of these days, if you do read it soon, you'll have to give us a full report on here. Like, sure. Oh my gosh, he was right. Or Chris Bailey has no idea what he's talking about.
The 2099 stuff was kind of an exciting. I mean, it came in the wave of like peak 90s comic boom, late 92, early 93, when everything was selling like crazy. You know, they all had all the first issues had those, you know, microchip borders with like the foil, a cool cover effect and stuff. And then eventually they rolled out other stuff, like they did the 2099 Unlimited. So you got to see Hulk 2099 in that book. And he was like a super grotesque version of the Hulk with like a beak and like, this, you know, his spinal column was like shooting out at the back and stuff.
Was this the one where, I mean, he had claws too? Reminded me of three big
fingers with claws on the ends.
He was frightening looking.
Yeah.
Bestial, I guess, is probably the best word for it.
Yeah, and he debuted in the 2099 quarterly series they were doing, and then eventually he got his own comic, and there was a Ghost Rider 2099 that I think was Chris Pacello's, one of his earliest books that he did. And I think was released at a time when, in that period of time when I wasn't really into comics. So I've never gone back, and I'm a big Ghost Rider fan. So that's one I've always kind of wanted to go back and check out it was like a cyberpunk version of Ghost Rider, I think, but I've never read those. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in the 2099 Marvel Universe stuff that I think it's worth going back and checking out. But it's still kind of a lot of it is still kind of a blind spot for me. But but these issues were cool, and I liked revisiting them.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, for my second 2099 comic that I ever read, I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I mean, it's compelling. Aside from my criticisms, I think if I had the biggest criticism about any of the books, it's probably just the future slang might be tough for me to just say. Stop distracting me. But, you know, other than that, I've enjoyed what I've read, really. So, yeah, at some point, maybe we'll throw up some of the other 2099 books and Ravage may get his day.
Oh.
Their day.
One. I know there are some people clamoring for it.
All right. Well, Chris Armstrong, you've been on this journey with me to the future, and I appreciate it once again. Go check out the Unspoken Decade Facebook page. There we have all sorts of fun stuff going up. Chris and I, every once in a while, we'll post some stuff. Simba Fan post stuff. Dean Compton post stuff over there. And, of course, theunspokendecade.com, where you can find all sorts of great articles. We mentioned Emily Scott's article last week in regards to Punisher 2099. I'm sure there's other articles that may interest you as a comic book fan. If you like the 90s, folks, The Unspoken Decade has got it covered.
Did someone say Unspoken Decade? The place where you need to go to check out some great articles about comics in the 90s? This would be a good time to plug a sponsor of the W2M Network, and that is Grammarly. For you, the listeners of Unspoken Issues, Grammarly is offering a free download of the Grammarly software. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M network to download Grammarly for free.
Also, you can check out the Unspoken Issues podcast Facebook group. If you go over there, you can become a member. It's real easy. At least right now, it's real easy. You can get right in and you can vote. We will usually put our polls up. We'll give you the opportunity to get your voice heard. Love interacting with our community as well. We got above 30 members over there, so we'd love to add some more. If you like 90s comics, we're talking about them right here on the Unspoken Issues podcast. And you can have your voice heard. Tell Chris and I what issues we need to cover.
We need help.
Yeah, let us know. I think for myself, that's about it. You can follow me at Stiznarchy on Twitter if you do so wish. Chris Armstrong, did you already plug your stuff?
No, but I'll jump in real quick. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrodyMan34.
All right, there it is. Well, I look forward to the next podcast that we will be releasing, which should be the discussion that Dean Compton and I will have in regards to WCW number one, Chris Armstrong's favorite wrestling company. I don't think he likes wrestling, folks. But anyway.
Hey, I remember Sting.
Okay. All right, dude, there it is. All right. Sting does show up in that comic. It's not the Crow Sting though, sir. I don't know if you remember the before Crow. Okay.
Well, the Ultimate Warrior ripoff, Sting.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Chris Armstrong, you need to come on the show.
I was really into wrestling for about 2 years in the very late 80s, early 90s. So okay, yeah. Well, I know a few things.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're talking to me about the Stinger, I guess we should say, yeah, then for sure. Man, well, folks, it is a fun issue. I can tell you that it is a battle royal. We may have, I don't know, there may be some surprises. You never know what's going to happen, especially when wrestling is involved. But that poll was shut down there. It was between WCW issue number one and WWF Battle Mania, I think is what it was called. So we'll be talking about this battle royal that occurs in WCW number one. It'll be me and Dean Compton coming at you. And like I said, we may have some surprises. You never know. I really came this close to asking Dean, like, can we cover it like we're commentators on a wrestling match? Because that would be the most fantastic thing ever. But I decided, nope, we're going to stick with this traditional unspoken issues format. But anyway, all right, yeah, keep an eye out for that. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been here too long. It's almost 2099 right now. I'm looking at my watch. That's Chris Armstrong. I'm Jesse Starcher. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one. Bye-bye.